Rich Honan pays us a visit once a month with some thoughts on headlines from the business world and beyond. He's a corporate attorney, and he is here to talk us about here with us to talk about all kinds of interesting issues, including American consumer debt, as well as business leaders listening to opposing viewpoints. We'll talk about a lot of these subjects plus much more. Rich Honan is with Phillips Lytle LLP, where he is the partner in charge of the Albany office, and it's always a pleasure to welcome Rich Honan back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me back yet another time.
It's always nice to have you here for our monthly sessions. We'll call them that, sessions. All right, so here we have a very interesting question, very interesting point about the rise in American consumer debt. This comes from many different sources, but I think a lot of times when we talk about this in reference to our homes,
right,
to our cars, and more so about educating our children.
Correct. Those are kind of the big three, and credit card debt as well.
Yes.
We've always been relying on debt. I mean, you know, it's debt that the economy works when people go out and buy stuff, right?
Right.
That's basically our economic theory. During the recession, people were buying less stuff because they didn't have as much money, and so for a couple of reasons, consumer debt actually went down. Now it is increasing. Now, a couple of those reasons that debt went down, some of them was people just did not have the money to borrow as much. The other reason is that a lot of credit card bad debt was just kind of written off, so that around 2010 or so, you see the level of debt went down fairly precipitously because credit card companies were writing off large amounts of debt. It wasn't really repayment. The problem now is that as we're told the economy is getting better, consumer debt is creeping up, and student loans are a big, big part of it. I guess the total debt for American families who have debt, who have consumer debt, averages $15,000.
Wow.
That doesn't seem like a lot to you? Seems like a lot to me.
It does.
And it's $7,000 for all families, but if you're averaging just people carrying consumer debt. The student debt is getting really... that we're already talking about ways of deferring debt and forgiving debt. And Mark Cuban, of all people, has kind of...
The owner of the Dallas Mavericks.
Yes, yes. And, you know, kind of...
A well-known entrepreneur and businessman and
yes.
A billionaire investor who is also a reality TV star on ABC's The Shark Tank.
Yeah, he's one of those crazy, nutty, pugnacious billionaire entrepreneurs that we have. And he came up with a proposal to reduce debt. He came up with a proposal to reduce tuition costs at colleges. But the way he did it was kind of rather than on the demand side instead of the supply side.
Right.
I guess we could argue about it. But he basically said, let's limit the amount of money people can borrow. So that, you know, there's two kinds of college debt, and one of them is, you know, from, you know, Sallie Mae, the student loan that we all are still, many of us are still paying off, and then the other is private lender debt. There's limits on Sallie Mae debt, but not on private lender debt. And so he would like to see Congress enact law. This is weird, a rich conservative asking Congress to enact laws. But he'd like to see the amount of money that people can borrow to go to colleges come down, be reduced. One, he says that would reduce debt. And two, he said, once you turn off that spigot, colleges would have to be a little more realistic about their tuition needs. Now, I know what you're about to ask, but go ahead.
I bet you don't.
Okay.
Okay, but what do you think I'm going to ask?
I thought you were going to ask, isn't that, then, what about... Doesn't that just leave out all of the people who can't afford to go to college?
You're right.
Because that was my question. I don't have a great answer for that. That's the first thing I'd like to know.
But also, because we have these caps on the debt, but I like the idea of as you say, the turning of the spigot of what colleges expect of what they can spend. I'm going to make a really weird analogy here.
Okay.
I haven't floated this at all. So if it really bombs, I apologize. But Two things struck me the other day. I was out with my nephew, and we were buying, of all things, he's 14 years old, and we were buying a video game. And I've bought many a video game for my nephew, and it's not a big deal. I got it, and as I was paying for it, I realized that when I was a kid in 1983, and video games were just coming out, they're the same price. They were $48 then. They're pretty much $48 bucks now. With this, Radio Shack is going under. I have a dear friend that I, my oldest and dearest friend, sent me a very interesting copy of an old Radio Shack catalog.
I used to love that catalog.
And you look
that
at the Radio Shack catalog. What was fascinating to me is the stereo equipment and the headphones and the microphones are all the same price.
Right.
The price hasn't changed in 30, 40 years. The price hasn't changed. Why college? Like, why can't we reach a point where it costs what it costs? This is what people can afford. And we reach a point of saying, okay, this is what, whether we're talking about the 1980s, the 90s, the aughts and beyond, this is what people can barely afford to spend. And it's not going to go any higher than that.
You wonder. And by the way, Radio Shack, Harman Kardon. Remember the kits?
Yes.
Like the Harman Kardon kits in the catalogs? They were so cool.
They're anyway, so cool. Yes. I got to show you this link. It's the coolest catalog in the world. It really is cool.
The college question is tough. And I'm going to quote my brother. So my...
You get along with your brother?
I get along great.
Okay, good.
I get along great with my... I'm very,
the way you said that, I'm going to quote my brother.
Yeah, right. Well, it's funny, though. At our age, right, it's you're fortunate to get along with your siblings,
yes,
your parents, and if your parents are still around and everything. So that's actually something I'm very thankful for. I'm the black sheep of the family because my family stands to the left of anybody from WAMC, okay? And my brother stands to the left of everybody in my family. When I was on once with the Night Perk guy, what's his name?
Blair Horner.
Yeah. My brother used to work for him, and he remembered him and everything. Anyway, my brother said if colleges did things and you took out the word college and put in the word bank, okay, it would be illegal. He said if banks did what colleges did, it would be illegal, right? They raise tuition. Their expenses are ridiculous. Is there a better gig than being an adjunct somewhere at a college or a full professor at a college?
Well,
We could argue about it.
Okay,
but,
as an adjunct, I can't say exactly, but it's a great gig. It's a great gig actually, because you get to go.
You actually work at it,
the
though.
Kids.
But there's lots who don't, and you actually. I've seen you with your class and with your kids, and you really work at it.
But then there's not a lot of money there. I mean,
Walker who caused another revolution in Wisconsin because he suggested that the state universities, they should have the professors like maybe teaching, like two classes instead of one or something like that.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Anyway, so the point is, if banks, if this kind of stuff was being done by banks or by a cable company or something like that, we'd be all over it. But because they're colleges, they're allowed to get away with it. You know, and why is that? Is that because we keep saying education is the answer? And we just want to, it's our job to, we see it as our role to make it so that anybody can go to college, regardless, even if they have no money.
Right.
Which you and I kind of agree with that, right? We don't want to see somebody who can't go to a school because there's no money.
Or that there is a system put in place that makes it somehow affordable.
Right. And that's our system. But that system is basically unfettered debt.
Well,
that's what it's morphed
into. Makes it affordable. But I think borrowing $40,000 a year isn't affordable.
Good point. Yeah.
I mean, just so because you can borrow it doesn't mean that it's affordable.
And that's the other thing. In any other context, you wouldn't be able. I thought of this back when I went to SUNY back when it was $750 a semester or something like that.
Right.
Back in 40 years ago, I don't know, but I remember people lending.
SUNY was in black and white.
Yeah, it was sepia. Everything was. Yeah, we were all kind of yellow tinged. We called it Albany State. That's how far.
Sure.
That's how long ago it was. I remember getting checks for $5,000 and $6,000 from the bursar, like through student loan, whatever the student loan people were. Or I think we went through banks, and I remember thinking, I can't ever pay this back. Even then, you know, like why would somebody lend me $6,000? You know,
and don't they know me?
Yeah, right. I mean, I was a couple of weeks out of high school, and same thing. We suspend all of our, you know, tying it in with the consumer. You know, we suspend all of our underwriting. We suspend all of our, you know, rational financial analysis when we give people money for college. You know, why is that?
It's an interesting point. I go back to Mark Cuban for a second, who said that this bubble was going to burst. And my question is, what does that world look like?
I think it's like every other post bubble world. It's more concentrated. You know, fewer players, more concentrated. I don't see how the bubble bursts, because I think Cuban was speaking on the occasion of some fairly small, but, you know, 115-year-old private college, was it Breyer or something?
Sweetbriar.
Yeah. Had closed its doors, you know, and he said, you know, a lot more colleges are going to do that. And I'm thinking, well, who's actually going to do that? All the state universities throughout the country are going to stay open. You know, the big colleges are going to stay open. They have a lot of money and endowments to, you know, to pave over a lot of, you can make a lot of financial mismanagement mistakes, you know, and have a lot of leeway with those kind of endowments. So I don't think we are looking at that kind of world. If we were, we'd be, the scary thing is, what if we're looking at a world where only the people who can afford it can go to college? And that seems really un-American, un-opportunity, un-capitalist. When the arch conservatives and the liberals agree on something, you know, either it's really wrong or really right. But I think none of us want a world, a country where if you can't afford it, you can't go to college.
Right. And especially when it becomes something that, because I see this in my classes of the kids asking me the question, is this worth it? Like, is this worth, like, right. And what am I doing? Is this worth it? If I can go, if I'm guaranteed a job, okay, maybe, but I'm not even guaranteed a job anymore. And I don't know if it's worth it. And I tell them what I believe, which is, well, if you're worth it, then it's worth it.
Right.
I mean, if you are worth it and you can sell yourself out in the world, then it will be worth it because you can do it. If you're not going to put in what is necessary to be worth it, then, well, no.
And I say the same, you know, when I guest lecture at the law school, and those kids are, you know, deeper in debt and also and also closer.
They've taken the primary debt, yes, and they've doubled down.
Right,
and said,
exactly.
I'm going to take more debt.
Yeah, right. And they're also closer to kind of, you know, the end of the debt. Debt subsidy, is that what you would call it? And they say the same thing, you know, is it worth it? And first of all, I say, look, if you're already in the middle of your third year of law school, it's a little late to ask that. But I'll tell you what is not worth it, at least at the law school level. Back when I was young and I was looking at law school, everybody said, oh, that's great, because even if you're not a lawyer, it's always great to, you know, a law school education will always help. Now, for the amount of money you're going to pay for that, you don't want to pay for a degree that will help. You only want to pay for a degree that's absolutely necessary to what you want to do.
Right.
And I would say the same thing. I think your kids are more, it's a little much more of a focused, right?
Well, right. But they're also interested in going into journalism and telecommunications, which, you know, it's not
very
exactly
competitive and very low paying in the
right.
beginning. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Well, yes. You know. I threw it in the beginning because I didn't want to start.
There's a few of us.
A resurrection.
Who can get lucky, I guess. But, you know, it's not. And it depends on market
Woodward
size and all
and
that
Bernstein,
other stuff.
Those guys make money.
Yeah,
right?
Well, lucky, right?
Katie Couric.
Sure. But you know, it's the same thing in really. There's a limit. I think what's been interesting to me, and this is getting off the topic a little bit, but again, about making that worth it, is that you once these kids get out of college, what I'm finding is that, more and more, because when you talk to them, when they're freshmen or sophomores, they'll tell you, you know, what are you going to do? And the first thing I'm going to do is get the hell out of here. I'm leaving Albany. I'm going to the city.
Fine.
By the time they're juniors and seniors and they have that opportunity to stay home and have mom and dad for a little bit and can work on that money and find out that there is a market for what they do here, I'm a big fan of that. I mean, I was able to do that. I realize that not everybody's able to do that.
If the market's there, that's great.
But I was lucky. I was lucky enough to not only have a job market, but also to say, okay, well, I can address my debt over these years because I'm going to have a place that I can live where I don't really have to pay rent or much of a rent. And because I'm working, my parents are tolerant of that.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Because I'm out working and doing what I said I was going to do.
But now, do you see the statistics on the amount of adult children living at home? It's huge. I agree. The problem is, it's just, what do you do when there's just not those, you know, we have those, in the law field, we have that issue as well. You know?
Well, in teaching too.
Yeah. So you have to go where the opportunity is. I will say, I never agreed with the economic development idea of all the economic development folks will say, oh, we got to, you know, it's a brain drain. We have to keep people here and keep young people here. And I always thought we actually do better by letting young people go somewhere else and then hopefully returning in some way, whether it's returning as a sponsor or an investor or starting their own business. But I don't think we want just the entire organism to be the capital region, right? Don't we want people to bring their experiences from other parts of the country and the world?
Well, of course. But I'm talking about also that idea of when you stay closer to home and that idea of wherever you go, that there is a bit of a cushion that allows you to go out and to because I think often, again, this gets more psychological than anything else, but often we look at, okay, well, what are we going to do to get the job? Got to get the job.
Right.
And while, yes, that is very important, because then you put off the debt, you put off the money, you put off paying back the money.
Right.
And sometimes if these kids are lucky enough to get the job out of school and to get a job out of school and to get something that may not pay a ton, but it's a good starting level job, and they can have a little bit of a cushion. Well, then, yeah, they can address the debt.
Which, by
the way, is not saying that the debt is justified. That it's still
it's still too much.
Yes.
And certainly, look, one structural thing, it seems like, I don't know why we don't do this tomorrow, is increase. Back when we're going back to a million years ago, but I thought it was 6 or 9. You didn't start repaying till 9 months or something like that.
Yeah.
I would have no problem giving kids deferments for a long time if they found a job. In other words, I don't want to disincent them from taking a job that's maybe low-paying but in their career
in
path.
In their field, sure.
Yeah, I want to help them do that. And so what I want to do is say, go and do that and go work at, you know, go from the college station to, you know, maybe WAMC. You know, maybe you might not make as much money as Joe Donahue, what we as a society can do is we'll get, the debt's going to continue to accrue, but we'll stay off your back for a while and try and go to learn to ply your trade.
Now, here's the other thing. So, and this is one of the points I know that you wanted to make, is that, so we're here saying, oh, okay, well, you know, let's keep the debt down, let's do all this. Meanwhile, you have the Fed that really thinks, well, hey, man, keep that up.
Well, and so you kind of want the Fed, it's what we started the show with. The economy works best when people buy stuff.
Right.
Kind of doesn't matter if they need it. They just need to buy it, right?
I mean, borrow it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so when you start seeing these warning signs when people start dipping into their savings to buy things or dipping into or using credit cards to not only to buy things but to make living expenses. And I think that's actually, I think we're going to start seeing more of that. The Fed does everything they can do to make us buy stuff. And now, of course, the Fed has done everything we could do to make sure we don't save money, that we invest in the stock market because that's the only place you can get a return, or that we make borrowing rates so attractive that people can borrow money. And I get that. I understand what they're doing. Can't say I agree with it. Because my question is, so what happens the last time we did this and interest rates start going up a quarter of a point or a half a point and they start publishing how much all the car loans in America go up You know what I mean? Like, you know, when your car loan goes up $30 a month or your mortgage goes up $50 a month and then gas starts costing more money, which is already back on its way up,
yeah.
Suddenly through nothing about you has changed except that you now suddenly don't have the money to, you know, to stay afloat. I think that's a very scary thing.
Well, and some of this to me also gets, I want to make three quick points. One okay. is about the education of this, because when you see like gas prices at 210 or whatever, right. and then you say, oh, well there this month, there was a 70% spike in people buying huge pickup trucks.
Wasn't that crazy?
I was like, well, that's stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just crazy? I'm sorry. That's just dumb. I mean, like, you know, it's going to go up. I mean, it's just like, don't you know it's going to go up?
Right.
And, the other thing too is, and this is part of that, I guess, is that, that we have a, when it comes to, borrowing and lending money, I'm going to use a word, a very old word, okay. flabbergasted,
wow.
by lending institutions, or people who are trying to sell something and have the power to give you the money as well, will say things like, well, look, everybody has a mortgage,
right.
everybody has a car loan, everybody has a college loan, but what are your other debts? And it's almost like they put that aside,
right.
but those are the big tickets.
Exactly.
Those are the big ones.
Right. Right. And especially the college debt, which is, you know, the high, it's got to be everybody's highest unsecured debt.
Sure.
I absolutely agree. And I think the whole idea of, you know, borrowing now, this is kind of what we do, right? We do things now and we hope it'll get worked out later. But, you know, we start seeing some increases. I think, you know, we could be into some bad times ahead. And you saw the thing, well, it was in the Wall Street Journal, so you might not have seen it. But they talk about how OPEC is kind of congratulating itself for keeping prices low, because what it did by not succumbing to hysteria and basically by not reducing output to make prices high, what they did was they put off a lot of the U.S. domestic fracking investments. So a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, there's going to be a lot less domestic oil and natural gas drilling, because it's not as economic now. So what that tells us is 2 years from now, gasoline prices are going to be higher, interest rates are going to be way higher. We have a lot of people on the brink. That $15,000 in consumer debt is going to go to $30,000 real
right.
fast. And you know, with wage growth stuck at something around nothing, that's a scary thing. And this would have been that could have been one good outcome of the recession, was that maybe we could have, I don't know, tightened up a little bit and let people know you don't necessarily need a new car every 2 years, you know, and you don't.
We're not good at that, though.
Yeah. We could get, I think that's a behavior that we could learn. Remember, it's always, the people are always ahead of the government, right? Like when things are bad, the people always save more money. People always kind of spend less money while the government, you know, does neither. Back when, you know, the people became more environmentally aware before the government did, you know,
yeah.
like people will do things like that, you know? Started to buy smaller cars and started to, those kind of things. So I think that's something that we can fix as a society. It's just, I don't think the government is leading us in the right way on that one.
Rich Honan is a partner in Phillips Lytle LLP, partner in charge, right?
Partner in charge of the Albany office.
Of the Albany office.
Don't say partner in charge of the whole firm, because
no.
we'll get 170
partner
calls.
In Phillips Lytle LLP. He's partner in charge of the Albany office, and he's so in charge, he wanted to come here. And for more information on the firm, you can visit their website, phillipslytle.com. Rich, it's always great to have you on the program. I look forward to our April conversation.
Me too. Nice
Thank
to see you.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.